This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour World Report recorded on Friday, June 4th, 2021. I'm Mark Belanger. In the report this week, secret corporate courts in free trade deals. Teachers want climate change taught in curriculums. The Labour Start report about union events and singing.
Would be in trouble as your emissions grew and grew. You said it's only froth and bubble, but did you really have a clue?
This is Radio Labour. One of the ways multinational corporations hold power over free trade deals is by the use of secretive courts in investor-state dispute systems, known by their acronym ISDS. These systems have allowed corporations to sue governments because they have raised the minimum wage in a country or implemented plain packaging provisions for cigarettes. To find out more about ISDS, I talked to Nick Crook. Mr. Crook is the head of international relations for the UK Union Unison. The UK is negotiating a free trade deal with Australia that Unison is hoping will not include an ISDS. I asked Mr. Crook to explain what an ISDS is.
The name says it all, in effect. It's an agreement that allows a private transnational or multinational investor to sue individual nation states in private investment tribunals for decisions that that state makes, maybe a legitimate public policy decision. ISDS has been around for about 50, 60 years, and originally they were often included in bilateral investment treaties. The UK already has 60-plus bilateral investment treaties, but in the last sort of 10 years, they've been embedded in the new generation of free trade agreements, where there'll be a specific investment chapter. And so they're now an integral part of the free trade agreement policy area. The main problem with ISDS is that increasingly challenges under ISDS are used not because a private investor has been expropriated by a domestic government, but because a private investor dislikes public policy decision that a member state takes. And therefore, they challenge that decision in these private investment courts.
Why does Unison object to ISDS?
There are a whole number of reasons. Firstly, if they're included in free trade agreements, they privilege investors in a way that workers or citizens are not privileged, because investment chapters are legally enforceable in these private investment tribunals, and they allow investors to challenge government in a way that workers, if a government is in breach of labour legislation, or citizens, if a government is in breach of environmental legislation, they can't challenge those governments often because those parts of the free trade agreements aren't legally enforceable. So it privileges private investors over workers or citizens. Secondly, because ISDS takes place in a private court system, these aren't courts run by national governments or by the international community. These are private investment tribunals set up by investment lawyers that don't have an existing body of case law. Each investment tribunal is capable of taking its own decision. It's not bound by case law or jurisprudence. Lawyers can play different roles in different investment tribunals. They can sit as a judge on one and then as a litigant on another, which compromises their role and compromises their position. And very often they're secretive as well. We may know what the final judgment is if a government has to pay out millions and millions of dollars in compensation to an investor. But actually the motivation, the grounds for the decision of a private investment tribunal are often kept secret. For example, in the case of Australia that was sued by Philip Morris, the multinational tobacco company, that cost the Australian taxpayer $24 million Australian dollars to defend in the investment tribunal. And although Australia was able to claim some of that back because they won the case, they only recovered about half of that. So the Australian taxpayers lost out a huge amount of money. And even if governments don't go through the court system, the threat of the use of ISDS against a government often freezes legitimate public policy decisions. And we're seeing that increasingly in environmental cases, because the vast majority of ISDS cases now are being used against countries that try to enforce environmental protection.
Teachers around the world are demanding that climate change be studied in schools. C. Marie Ainsborough has a report.
We have to prepare for recovery, and teaching about climate change education is part of the recovery.
That is Hollis Holst, the Deputy Secretary of Education International. EI is the global union for teachers and other educators. It represents more than 32 million union members in 178 countries. One of its affiliates is the Canadian Teachers Federation. EI has started a global campaign to add the study of climate change to curriculums. Here's why.
We simply cannot wait. So it's not a moment to lose. And I think we've seen all through this pandemic that teachers and other educators have kept on working. And they've been acknowledged for that. They've been out there for their students, whether it's been online, whether it's been on radio, whether it's been driving around, trying to deliver an education that is relevant for them here and now and for the future. And even though we are in a pandemic, the challenges for the future haven't disappeared. So we need them to be part of the education we deliver today and tomorrow. And climate change is one of them. It's not just about learning to read and write. That's important because they are important tools to be able to acquire knowledge, to utilize knowledge, and to reflect on how you can make a difference. Teachers and education is about the future. And what our students are concerned with, and also sometimes expects fear for, is a future that is impacted by climate change. And I think that's why educators are so concerned of having a content and an education that addresses this so that it's relevant for our students. Some already have that curriculum. Some are already dealing with this on a daily basis. But others need that framework to be able to use the time and space to be relevant for their students, and also to give them the educational space that also is safe to reflect on the knowledge that is out there, to reflect on how this impacts on their daily life. Our students live the consequences of climate change every day, and they need to be able, as I said, to reflect and acquire knowledge so that they can develop how they can make a change for the future, because they can, because we need to instill that hope that they feel, yes, I can make a change as an activist, as a citizen, when acquiring your skills for the job and the career you want to do, that you see that, yes, I can do that in a better future within a green economy. And that's the purpose that teachers want to be there for their students, including other educators too, everyone who interacts with young people. You want to be able to be relevant for them today, and young people are asking for this. In a way, we could even say that we have a lot to learn from young people, because they can teach those of us that have been around a long time and have difficulties in changing our habit that, yes, it's possible to act in a different way. Yes, it's possible to think in a different way. Yes, it's possible to implement other solutions, and our students are the future. They are going to give us those solutions, and we need an education to deliver that. Teachers today, educators today are ready to do that. Even though we are in a pandemic, they're not teaching about the pandemic every day. They're trying to teach the full breadth of the curriculum, and they're preparing for the day that the pandemic is over. We have to prepare for recovery too. And teaching about climate change education is part of the recovery, because that is also interconnected with all the other challenges we have, also when it comes to inequalities around the world. And we need to see how they interact and how we can create a better future that is more just for all our students.
This is C. Marie Ainsborough reporting for Radio Labor.
Here with his report about union events is Labor Start correspondent Derek Blackadder.
This week, our top story section included links to coverage of trade union statements marking the anniversary of Tiananmen Square, the long list of human rights violations by the Myanmar military that has been collected by the Global Union Federations, and the news that Lee Chuk Yan, General Secretary of the Hong Kong Confederation of Trade Unions, has been given a further jail sentence for organizing a pro-democracy protest. Of course, we had a large number of stories about the ongoing national general strike in Colombia. We went beyond collecting news about the strike in two ways. Of course, we are running an online action. But for our solidarity contribution, we organized a webinar with two leading Colombian trade unionists in conjunction with the Public Services International. That's the Global Union Federation for Public Sector Workers. Hundreds of trade unionists around the world were able to hear Francesco Maltes, president of CUT Colombia, and Margarita Lopez, president of Senatra Coval Colombia, speak about the conditions that gave rise to the strike and what has been sustaining it for so long. And, of course, about the massive state repression of the popular movements in Colombia that has resulted in dozens of deaths and hundreds of disappearances. A recording of the session is available on our Facebook page. For our Working Women page, our volunteers found reports about the prevalence of workplace sexual harassment in the United Kingdom's healthcare system, protests by women workers in Eswatini, and the organizing women sex workers in South Africa are doing as they press for the legalization of their work. Our Health and Safety Newswire highlighted the British Union push for a ban on emails from bosses outside of work hours, the daily safety concerns of South African healthcare workers, and the hazards of life as a miner in Pakistan. Our photo of the week is of Swiss trade unionists presenting a petition with 137,000 signatures to their government. The unions have initiated a process which they hope will lead to a national referendum on whether to improve the state pension. LabourStart hosts online solidarity actions at the requests of unions around the world. This week we'd like to highlight an urgent appeal for online solidarity with the workers of Colombia as they face violent repression by that country's police and military. A general strike was called over a month ago and will continue until the government reverses its neoliberal economic and social policies. Look for details of this and other campaigns on our site. It takes only seconds to send a message that could change workers' lives for the better. This is Derek Blackadder from LabourStart, reporting for Radio Labour.
Now here is Australia's Victoria Labour Choir with You Knew, Grandpa, You Knew.
You left the problem up to who? You knew our world would be in trouble as your emissions grew and grew. You said it's only froth and bubble, but did you really have a clue? You knew, Grandpa, you knew, Grandpa, so tell me what. Did you tell me what you do? You knew, Grandma, you knew, Grandma, so tell me what did you do? Now hear our song from 2040. Sit up and listen to our view that you were selfish and were naughty to leave a world in such a stew. You knew the temperature was rising. You hoped that it might stop at two. It's more, and so it's not surprising, that we can put the blame on you. You knew, Grandpa, you knew, Grandpa, so tell me what did you do?
Tell me what you do.
You knew, Grandma, you knew,
Grandma,
so tell me what did you do? You knew clean coal was not the future, clean gas an oxymoron too. You had a lovely life to suit ya, and never wanted to say whoa.
And that's it, international labor news you can use. I'm Marc Boulanger. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.